Tomas, Tomas, we are back, my friend. And you know what that means. Enough out of this market. Enough out of you. We got to hear me out with Victor Jones. Victor Jones, how are you, my friend?
Tom, Tony, Tasty Nation, how you guys doing?
Doing well. Thank you for asking, my friend.
Just another romp in the park
today. They don't like anything, gentlemen. They don't like anything. They don't like stocks. They don't like bonds. They don't like gold. The only thing they like is Tesla and copper, apparently.
No, apparently they like NVIDIA, too.
And they're going to eat wheat. That's it. True.
You know what? It's almost like there was a big economic data or a big economic report this morning. But I suppose, gentlemen, that's neither here nor there. I didn't come to discuss whether or not economic reports matter or not. I came to discuss being public.
Oh, you're still sorting through this, huh?
Oh, my gosh, Tom, I had steam coming out of my ears for about 72 hours after your last podcast with Dylan. So I decided I came with the white flag. Here's what I want to do. I'm going to play a little game with you and everybody in the chat as they're trying to play a little defense here in the marketplace. I want to give you some of the public phrases that I hate. Over the years, I've consumed a lot of financial media. I've heard so many phrases that mean absolutely nothing. In fairness, I've probably said one or two of them in the past. I'm going to give you a couple of mine. I want you to give me a couple of yours. And if you're playing along at home, I want you to type in some of these in the chat. Number one offender, I'm going to give it to you right now, cautiously optimistic. This is my absolute number one pet peeve. Cautiously optimistic means absolutely nothing to anybody. Generally speaking, all you're saying when you're saying cautiously optimistic is you're playing positive drift. The second one, gentlemen, is cash on the sidelines. People have been referring to cash on the sidelines since cash started piling on the sidelines. It means absolutely nothing at all times. I'm going to pause for just a second. I can't see your faces, whether you're smiling or whether you're angry. So I'm
we're smiling. We're smiling.
Why would we be angry? We don't disagree with you.
I know. So I'm going to pause for a second. Do you got any of these phrases that you've heard over the years that you absolutely hate? Chat, give me some as well.
Well, it's funny because I cautiously optimistic, I would agree with you, is just like, you know, It's ridiculous.
It's like kissing your sister.
Cautiously optimistic is...
Sure.
I'm not even sure what that means. I didn't know you were going this way, so I got to think about this.
Cautiously optimistic, you have no opinion or it was wrong, and you're just trying to, you know, stick with it. Horrible.
Yeah, I mean, nothing bothers me more than I like them here unless, but...
the two-handed economist, of course. Horrific.
Cash on the sidelines.
All right, let me give you a couple more.
Okay.
I'm going to give you a couple more. I'm going to give you some chance to think about these. I've been stewing over these because, quite frankly, man, you called me and a couple of hardworking guys on this network public, and I never hear them say any of these things. And so I thought it deserved calling some of these things out. We're seeing some profit-taking here today, Tom. Is that what you think is going on in the markets here today? We're seeing a lot of profit-taking. Here's the other one. This one might take the cake for 2024. We've got ourselves a stock picker's market, gentlemen. Did you not know that? That's what we're looking at here in 2024, a stock picker's market. And probably one of my favorites, it's been used a lot here lately over the last couple of weeks, maybe the last couple of months, we're overdue for a pullback. This one's going to be a bit controversial, especially with the Tasty crowd. But I think this one is just as ridiculous as cautiously optimistic. It's on the other side. So many people say we are due for a pullback. The other way to say that is the markets need a breather. Some people said we need to go down in order to go up. All of these things to me are cockamamie nonsense. Gentlemen, do you have a response on any of those?
Yes. Some of them, like we need to open down to go up. I believe in that. Or we need to open up to go down. Yes. I actually think there are certain times when that's exactly the tape action you need in order to get like something, you know, going intraday or it's more tradable. All the other ones, I pretty much agree with you on. I pretty much agree with you on. I think that an expectation of a sell-off, though, that does not bother me, because I actually will say a lot, you know, listen, we've been going straight up. I kind of feel like, you know, I kind of feel like we need to pull back a little bit. You know, it's almost like 7 reds in a row. Hey, I think it's going to be black. I think that's a reasonable. I know the odds aren't any different at the roulette table, but I feel like it's okay to say that.
A little gambler's fallacy for you guys here in the morning.
Yeah, we like a little gambler's fallacy from time to time. Yeah. I mean, that's how we roll. A little gambler's fallacy for sure.
So that's my olive branch to you, Thomas. I had steam coming out of my ears for 72 hours, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to go get him. I'm going to go get him on our next segment. And I thought, you know what? Let's have some fun with this public idea, especially on a day with a sell-off. I'm going to give you a peace offering of a few public statements that I myself cannot stand. Here's what I want to ask you guys as well before I get to the market reaction today, and I want to ask you what you guys are doing with this sell-off. I want to have I don't know if this is fun or not, but on August, I think it's August 8th, Tesla, everyone's been talking about Tesla over the last couple of days. Let me ask you this question. How many drivers do you think are driving for Uber across the world?
How many drivers are driving for Uber across the world?
No idea.
Oh my God, I would have zero way to get, 500,000?
I know, but you like these games. You like these games.
500,000.
I wouldn't even know where to guess.
A million? I don't know.
It's 6 million globally. I think the number's right around 1.5 in the
I never would have guessed a number that high. Never.
So here's where I want to go next, because you're this ultra futurist guy. Give me the chip. AI is the future. I want to talk to you about robo-taxis for just a second. Everybody's excited about this Tesla event at the beginning of August. It's a robo-taxi event. I think a lot of people sort of have this idea that they're not anywhere closer to actually deploying that to the market, but who actually knows? And even if you are ready to produce one of these things, you still got to get government approval to let these things just drive them damn cells all across the United States. The point being, Thomas, what do you say to those 6 million Uber drivers, and let's not forget Lyft or Grab throughout Southeast Asia, and I can come up with a handful of other companies. What do you say to all those gig workers if, in fact, Tesla's cracked the code and we've got robo-taxis within the next 2 to 5 years driving throughout the United States? What does Tom the Futurist say to the 6 million global Uber drivers, the 1.5 million in the United States? How do you spin a positive story out of robo-taxis taking all those jobs from those people?
Well, first of all, you're gonna hate my response to this, because I think it's actually a pretty dumb question, and I'll tell you why.
Oh, all right.
I mean, it's a public dumb question, really, is what you're trying to say.
Because you already know my answer. Because you know, I never am going to turn back technology. First of all, I don't think that's ever going to be the case to start with. So let's just put it that way. But you could have made the same argument before for Uber. What are you going to do with all these taxi drivers? And the answer is, you know, they found something else to do, or they drove an Uber. What are you going to do with all these Uber drivers when robo-taxis come on board? And the answer is, robo-taxis are going to need a massive network. If they even work, they're going to need a massive network of either owners, support, everything else. There's going to be a crazy amount of jobs created by robo-taxis, because they're going to disrupt the business with technology, make things obviously cheaper. And for that reason, it's going to grow even faster. So it's going to create a just ginormous number of jobs. And the gig business will slightly transition to something else. Like, when we replace product A with product B, and it's a technology advancement, it always creates a better economy and more work, not a worse economy and less opportunity.
Got it. So no worries. magic will happen. Synergies will be created. Jobs will be created. Don't worry, Victor. Don't worry that over the last decade or multiple decades that the job participation rate has actually been falling and that we've gained the unemployment rate to tell us that we're at all-time lows, and not worry about all the people who've been left behind in the U.S. economy. Don't worry about that. There will be plenty more jobs that will be created.
Yeah, I mean, you could have made the same argument.
Dumb public question.
You could have made the same argument when they invented the automobile. What's going to happen?
I was going to say, when they took away the horses.
What's going to happen to all those horses and all the people that take care of the horses? I mean, I just don't buy the argument, Victor. I think it's kind of like, you know, it's an old school kind of almost old school textbook thing. I don't like it. It's you're crying wolf on that thing. I don't like it. I don't think that is the risk.
I mean, I think computers were a bigger risk to anything in the job market when computers first came on, and it did nothing but enhance business.
I mean, I'm going to talk to you about the trading business. When they first automated the first exchange, and we all were sitting...
I was going to look for an Uber driver.
We were all standing in the pit, and we're like, oh my God, what's going to happen to all of us? We're about to be out of business. And yeah, everybody transitions to... you know, off the floor to other aspects of the business. That's what happens. But the markets got better and the business increased by 20-fold. How do you argue against that? Yet you would have been making the same argument, you know, 25 years ago standing in the SPX pit.
I think I can see new opportunities being created through robotech. I mean, Elon Musk himself said a new job opportunity will just be to own these things. You create a fleet and they're out picking people up, dropping people off, effectively creating new streams of income for you without necessarily needing to drive those things. The question being, what's the barrier or the cost of entry to be able to participate in the new jobs that are created? I'm not disagreeing with you that it will create new opportunities. It's perhaps new opportunity, not necessarily for the existing gig worker, but somewhere maybe up the asset owner.
I think that's the way you have to look at it. I think that's absolutely right. I that's what I said to you at first. I didn't even know what Elon said, but that's exactly what was my response. It is going to create, the better technology gets, the more jobs it creates. It doesn't take away jobs. It adds more jobs. And that's always been the case. And finance... just looking at the world of finance where we are, you can see that. Like I said, the business increased, you know, so many times, so many thousands of percent by technology improving that, yeah, a few pit traders lost their jobs and, you know, moved on to other roles inside the industry, hopefully. But I guess the point is that, Victor, that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. You need that to happen.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but I wanted your response on robotaxis because I had never heard you explicitly speak to it.
Well, I mean, I'm not jumping in a robotaxi anytime soon because it's not my, I mean, honestly, I don't know if it's my thing.
Bro, you cannot be serious right now. You mean to tell me you would sign up for day one chippage in your brain, but you won't get... the same guy is making the goddamn chip that goes in your brain that's making the robotaxi. But for some reason, you're down with putting the chip in your brain, but you won't get in the car he made to drive you around? Tell me how that makes sense.
Oh, I didn't say that made sense yet. I'm not saying I won't use a robotaxi. I don't mind being the first person to be chipped. I don't want to be the first person to be in a robotaxi or a flying taxi. But I'll take
it. It's not logical, Victor. Don't try to make logic.
I'll take the first chip. If you want me to take the first chip, I'll take the first chip.
Oh, I would gladly volunteer.
I don't believe that for one second, Victor.
I drove you to that appointment.
Okay,
then let me ask you a real quick question. Your reaction to the what's going on this morning. What are you pressed the shorts here? Do you look to go long? Do you like bonds? You like gold? Like, is there anything here that's interesting to you?
Ooh, this is a very tough question this morning because this is one nasty, ugly, you know, this is an ugly, ugly market. And I don't think we've seen something.
Yeah, we really haven't had an uptick. Even the S&P is down 82, NASDAQ down 300 and change. It's almost eerily quiet with volatility only up 84 cents and bonds getting decimated 112.30.
Yeah, I'm really shocked that this is the nail in the coffin for the rate reduction. That's what I think I'm most surprised about. I didn't think you'd see bonds trading in the 112 handle. I had no scenario where they got down to 112. Let's put it that way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the biggest surprise for me is that, you know, Meta missing because Meta's been out of control, and IBM missing because AI is so overpriced.
Well, I don't think Meta missed, did they? I mean, they beat on every metric. They just guided lower.
Tesla missed.
If I'm not mistaken.
Okay, whatever the case is, I don't care whether they say they made it or missed. It's how the stock market reacts. And the stock market reacted like fair. Whatever they heard, they didn't like it. And it doesn't surprise me that much in Meta. It doesn't surprise me that much in IBM. But what does surprise me the most this morning, because I don't care about individual stocks that much, is that the bonds are trading, you know, under 113. And I think that is something that, you know, you basically take every single rate cut off the table and throw, it has to have swung the odds in favor of a rate hike right now. Mm. And that is going to throw the market into a little bit of a tizzy. And that's why SPOOs are down 85 this morning. That's the reason. That's all there is to this.
I totally agree with you. I know you couldn't give a rat's ass what that GDP number said this morning, but it came in light at 1.6%, meaning slower growth. If you take out a bunch of like weird anomalies with the data, you get 3%, which was still lower than what the market was expecting. And the biggest problem is there's a price component with GDP. So if you told somebody, you know, some Joe Schmo off the street, you said, okay, we got slowing growth. Well, they go, okay, that's great. We got rate cuts, so that'll be fine. The problem is that the price component of GDP was also warmer, which means inflation is still a problem in some of this data. So you don't have the rate cut situation to lean on. So you got bonds selling at the same time equities are selling, and gold doesn't like this thing either. I know you don't care about any of that stuff, but that was the initial read through on this morning's print.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm actually, it's a strange, so far a little strange to me. I mean, Apple, Nvidia, Netflix, Tesla, they're all up, and SPOOs are down 80. I wouldn't have guessed that. And the Nasdaq is...
But that's almost an okay thing. Like, they're buying some of the stock.
No. I think it is an okay thing. Right. Like, I've been buying bonds all morning, Victor, and I know I'm wrong. I mean, short term, I'm wrong. Today, I'm wrong. But I feel like it's...
What's your first clue?
I feel like the right thing to do. I feel like it's the right thing to do.
So when do you care about the right thing to do?
I sort of.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I heard this discussion. If you would have told the market that they could have got 5% yields again after we already pressed 5% in the 10-year and everybody bought them back up, you tell them you're going to get that opportunity again as you near it. Will the market take it again? Will the market take that as an opportunity, or do you need more yield this time to go in there and start buying bonds on the long end? Do you think you need to press higher than 5% this time around? Do you get what I'm saying, Tom?
I totally do. I would be really surprised.
Is the market going to require higher yield given everything they know about?
I would be really surprised.
Everything they know about spending.
I know. I hear you. I totally get it. I would be like super shocked. Super shocked.
Yeah. I do agree with you. As we get closer to 5%, the risk reward on that long end starts to become more interesting as a trade. I don't know longer term if you still need to see 5.5%, you need to see 6%, God forbid, in order to slow the economy down. But you know, I would have to imagine the closer you get to 5% in the long end in that 10-year, it becomes more a really interesting risk-reward trade. And we're getting pretty close at like 4.75 or wherever we are next morning.
Yeah, this is kind of wild. All right, Vic, listen, sorry we didn't have any video today. I guess
my mom said I had a face for radio, Tom, so this is the way to go from now on.
No. You're the best looking guy we got on the network.
Absolutely. You kidding me?
Yeah.
You bring all the girls
That's
to the
like
yard. Girls to the
envelope.
Yard.
Yeah. But we're not going to tell that to Jamal because he'll be really upset if we say that.
Thanks, Victor. Appreciate your time, man. We're going to take a quick 90-second break and come back. We got more Tasty Live after this, Sosnoff. We'll be back in 90 seconds. Market Measure.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live, Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live, Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.